We're in the book of Proverbs. We're a bit light this evening because there's a group that have gone on holiday. And there are those who are unwell tonight as well. And Joseph is away preaching as well. So we're fewer in number. I hope it's not because of the subject we're looking at, the forbidden woman. But we're going to look at Proverbs chapter 5, which is just the next bit on in our study in Proverbs. So I'm going to read Proverbs 5, and then we'll get into things. So, Proverbs 5, this is what it says. My son, be attentive to my wisdom. Incline your ear to my understanding, that you may keep discretion, and your lips may guard knowledge. For the lips of a forbidden woman drip honey, and her speech is smoother than oil. But in the end she is bitter as wormwood, sharp as a two-edged sword. Her feet go down to death, her steps follow the path to Sheol. She does not ponder the path of life. Her ways wander, and she does not know it. And now, O sons, listen to me, and do not depart from the words of my mouth. Keep your way far from her, and do not go near the door of her house, lest you give your honour to others, and your years to the merciless. Lest strangers take their fill of your strength, and your labours go to the house of a foreigner. And at the end of your life you groan when your flesh and body are consumed, and you say, how I hated discipline, and my heart despised reproof. I did not listen to the voice of my teachers or incline my ear to my instructors. I am at the brink of utter ruin in the assembled congregation. Drink water from your own cistern, flowing water from your own well. Should your springs be scattered abroad, streams of water in the streets, let them be for yourself alone and not for strangers with you. Let your fountain be blessed and rejoice in the wife of your youth, a lovely deer, a graceful doe. Let her breasts fill you at all times with delight, be intoxicated always in her love. Why should you be intoxicated, my son, with a forbidden woman and embrace the bosom of an adulteress? For a man's ways are before the eyes of the Lord, and he ponders all his paths. The iniquities of the wicked ensnare him, and he has held fast in the cords of his sin. He dies for lack of discipline, and because of his great folly, he is led astray. Okay, we're continuing our Wednesday evenings in Proverbs, and we've come to chapter 5. But before we come to chapter 5, we just need to look at the closing words of chapter 4. Because why is chapter 5 chapter 5? Why is it here? Well, chapter 4 leads us in. It says, my son, be attentive to my words, incline your ear to my sayings, let them not escape from your sight, keep them within your heart, for they are life to those who find them and healing to all their flesh. Keep your heart with all vigilance, for from it flow the springs of life. Put away from you crooked speech, and put devious talk far from you. Let your eyes look directly forwards, and your gaze be straight before you. Ponder the path of your feet, then all your ways will be sure. Do not swerve to the right or to the left. Turn your foot away from evil. Now Isaiah, I need to turn to it, but Isaiah in chapter 35, he speaks of the way of holiness, the highway of holiness. And a highway shall be there, and it shall be called the way of holiness. It's a highway. It's a straight path. And if you keep on it, you won't go astray, and you'll arrive safely in Zion, because it goes on at the end of the chapter, and the ransom of the Lord shall return. Because they've kept on the highway and come to Zion with singing, everlasting joy shall be upon their heads. They shall obtain gladness and joy, and sorrow and sighing shall flee away. So there's a highway of holiness. Bunyan picked it up in Pilgrim's Progress. That's the picture really here. Our man is on a highway. That's our man. He's on the highway, all right? A highway of holiness. And what does the writer say? What does Solomon say? He says, verse 20, keep your ears open to my commands, to God's commands. Verse 21 of chapter 4, never let them out of your sight. In fact, verse 21, lock them inside your heart so they can't escape. Because these aren't just words, verse 22. They are life to those who find them and healing to all their flesh. Their life. And therefore especially guard your heart, verse 23. Keep your heart with all vigilance, for from it flow the springs of life. Your heart is the me, it's the me inside me, it's the real me, it's who I am. Be vigilant, guard your heart, because if things go wrong in your heart, they will go wrong everywhere. And since there's a direct link between what's in your heart and what's in your mouth, verse 24, if you're on the narrow way, be careful how you speak. Because if your tongue is crooked and you're trying to walk on the narrow straight way, you find you will depart from the narrow and straight way. You'll go astray. Put away from you crooked speech and put devious talk far from you. And since it's the highway of holiness, what are you to do? Verse 25, look directly forwards and your gaze be straight before you. Keep your eyes on the path. And of course, as New Testament believers, we say keep your eyes on Jesus. However difficult it gets. And then the last two verses of chapter 4, verses 26 and 27, watch where you're putting your feet so you keep on that narrow way. Okay, so that's what it's saying. Here he is, he's walking on the highway, he's very careful how he speaks, he's looking straight ahead so he doesn't go off one side or the other, and he's looking where he's putting his feet because he doesn't want to fall down one side, fall down the other side. Okay, that's fine, all well and good, we agree with that, no problem there at all. But then we come to chapter 5. And chapter 5, we're introduced to this forbidden woman. Why go from here to suddenly talk about adultery? What's the connection between the two? Is it just that, well, there's another big subject we need to talk about. Because if you leave the highway, why would you leave the highway? You leave the highway, well, those who leave the highway, well, the danger of leaving the highway is those who make sin look attractive. That's the point. What might make our man leave the highway is someone who makes sin look attractive. And in this particular instance, what makes sin look so attractive is the forbidden woman. That's why it's talked about here. My son, be attentive to my wisdom, incline your ear to my understanding, and you that you may keep discretion, your lips guard knowledge. For the lips of a forbidden woman drip honey, and her speech is smoother than oil. There's an attraction there. Now, before we look at the rest of chapter 5, we've got to ask an important question. Why is the forbidden woman so attractive? Why are her words so easy to swallow? What's the sweetness? Why is she so intoxicating? What is it all about? Now, this is really written particularly from a man's perspective. So I'm going to be talking about particularly men, but that's not to exclude, obviously, everyone who's here. It's just because that's what it's talking about. So why is it so attractive? Well, a few things to say. Genesis chapter 1, the first commandment. God blessed them, and God said to them, be fruitful and multiply, fill the earth and subdue it, and have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the heavens, and over every living thing that moves on earth. Okay? So the first commandment is to multiply and to subdue the earth. So what are men hardwired for? They're hardwired to have dominion, to subdue the earth, work. And part of that subduing and having dominion means that's why they have testosterone. It gives them aggression, it gives them force, it gives them drive, because they have to subdue. But also the command is to multiply. So if men are hardwired for work, they're also hardwired for sex. That's the way God has made them. And what else are they hardwired for? Well, the second commandment which God gives, chapter 2 and verse 16, and the Lord commanded the man, saying, you may surely eat of every tree of the garden. So men are also hardwired to eat. Right? Men are very simple, I think. Men run on three things. They run on work, they run on sex, they run on food. If those tend to be fine in their lives, they're happy men. They're very simple. They're obviously, these are generalities, they're always complicated men out there. But I think on the whole, that's what men are hardwired to be like. Those things were hardwired into a sinless Adam. A sinless man in the image of God was hardwired to be like that. What's more, when God brings Eve to Adam, look at his reaction. Okay, God takes the rib, clothes it in flesh, brings the woman to him, and the man said, he breaks into song or poetry, doesn't he? This alas is bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman because she was taken out of man. It's the first poem in the Bible. And what's it in praise of? It's in praise of a beautiful woman. A headline in the Science Daily, okay? Men sing about dating and sex more often than women. They did analysis of all the songs from 1960 all the way through to the present day. It's men who sing about romance. It's men who sing about women. It's men who sing about these things. Because it's hardwired in. That's why Adam breaks into, whether it's a poem or a song. The point is this, is that a sinless Adam is enraptured with Eve. He doesn't say, well, that's really good, I'm very glad now. We can go ahead now and I can fulfill my calling. He's just overwhelmed by what he sees. Thrilled. Because that's the way man has been hardwired. I was interested, obviously 60s music is the Beatles. Well, there's other things, one is the Beatles. But the first Beatles song, I know this is true, but I read this, the first Beatles song that didn't involve boy, girl, man, woman interactions was Nowhere Man. Right? That's 1965. They've already got 62, 63, 64, and most of 65, before they get onto another subject, outside relationships. Interesting, isn't it? It's hardwired in. What's more, goes on to say, therefore a man shall leave his father and his mother and hold fast to his wife, and they shall become one flesh. Okay? A rib is taken out of Adam. It's made into Eve. When he looks at Eve, he's looking at himself outside himself. He's looking at his, if you like, he's looking at his other self. She's bone of his bone, flesh of his flesh. But then what happens when they become, when they have sex? She comes back to him. He becomes part of her and she becomes part of him. What was taken out of him returns to him. There's a completeness, there's a wholeness. There's a new, if you like, there's a new human being being created. Out of the two, God has made one. She becomes part of him, two living souls in this relationship of ever deepening intimacy and love. And that's why sex is supposed to be all-consuming. A little later on, Adam knew Eve, his wife. It's not being coy, it's actually saying that's what took place. He is knowing her. He is disclosing himself to her. She is disclosing herself to him. He's disclosing himself to the one that he loves. She's disclosing herself to the one that she loves. That's why it's to be all-consuming. It's to make a new from the two one. It's to glue them together. And then how does Satan get to Adam? Okay, how does Adam fall? He goes through Eve. And okay, Eve takes the fruit. She offers it to Adam. When she offers it to Adam, Adam's got a choice, hasn't he? He can either follow the Lord and lose his beautiful wife, potentially. Or he can go with his beautiful wife and lose the Lord. That's how Satan gets him. He gets him through his wife. Because which way is he going to go? Well, he chooses to go with his wife. That's why he blames the Lord, if you remember. The Lord says to him, you know, what have you done? And he said to him, where are we now? Who told you you were naked? Have you eaten of the tree which I commanded you not to eat? The man said, the woman whom you gave to be with me, she gave me the fruit and I ate. He's saying, in effect, if you hadn't given me such a beautiful wife, I wouldn't have fallen. So you see how it's all stacking up. And now, what do we read? When they sin, they're naked. And they want to cover their nakedness up. Why? Because now nakedness is a threat. Because he can be brutal and use his strength to assault her, but then she can use her nakedness to manipulate and to control him. And that's what's going on in Proverbs chapter 5. The forbidden woman is using her nakedness to destroy the man. So in a perfect world, sex is hardwired in. to a man. In a perfect world, he delights in his wife. In a perfect world, their relationship, their marriage relationship, is all-consuming. That's the way it's designed. But now they're fallen. Now Adam's fallen. Now the children of Adam have fallen. And that which was hardwired in has been corrupted. And instead of it being something which unites, it has the power to destroy. So that's why it's really serious. You know, it's easy to think, ooh, it's a bit embarrassing, chapter 5, but we'll skip over chapter 5. But actually, this goes back to Eden. This is all Genesis 1 and 2 and 3 stuff. And if you know people who have, for whom this has happened to, well, a study on a Wednesday evening might save a lot of heartache. So I'll go back to Proverbs chapter 5 again. And we'll just move through it very quickly. I'm going to just refer to verses as we go. And the first one is chapter 5, verses 1 to 6. We might call it the seduction. Okay? So there he is, he's walking on the highway of holiness. Let's put, I don't know how we're going to do this right. There's a, okay, she's wearing a dress. Okay, and then she's, give her hair. All right, she's not on the highway of holiness. Is that authentic enough for people? What's going to stop him? He's walking along. What stops him is her speech. For the lips of a forbidden woman drip honey, and her speech is smoother than oil. What she says is attractive, appetizing, easily ingested. So he stops. He's no longer looking straight ahead. He turns. He's no longer thinking where he's putting his feet. And you see the danger is very real. What he should do is what Joseph did in Genesis 39. Joseph just kept going, didn't he? He didn't stop. He fled the house from Potiphar's wife. But he didn't flee the house. But he rebuked her first, if you remember. He says to Potiphar's wife, he says, how can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? Joseph meets Potiphar's wife's speech with, that's the language of chapters 1, verses 1 and 2, with wisdom, understanding, discretion, knowledge. That's why it's significant, the few verses before, that you're to put away crooked speech. Because if your speech is all the time coming out of your heart that it's flavoured with wisdom and knowledge and discretion, you will have the ready answer and know what to say. The forbidden woman. These days it can be pornography, so accessible, so easy to find. It might also be Satan's ambush. I didn't know where to say this. I checked it with Mandy. But I took a funeral, 1999. It was outside the church. It was for a school friend, and her mother had died, and I took the funeral. And then after the funeral, we went for the reception, went back to the house. That's fine, no problem. Talking with lots of people. It was 1999, and someone came to speak to me, a woman, quite attractive woman, and she said, I'm from New Zealand, I could have the first millennial baby, because it's 2000, and this would be the date. Would you be the father? So I was a bit surprised. So I gave her a lecture on why there should be two, a mother and a father, and they should be married, and so on and so on. But it's an ambush, isn't it? I'm outside my normal territory, if I can put it like that. I'm in a place where who would know what I would say? And she said, you keep things secret. So you see, Satan's ambush. So, but whatever her attractive speech, what does the writer say? The honey becomes bitter, doesn't it? Verse 4, but in the end she is bitter as wormwood. And also, it says, verse 4, she's as sharp as a two-edged sword. So however much you feel you can handle this, you know, someone might think, well, I can go so far, it's safe. I'm in control. Actually, you won't. It's a two-edged sword. It's got a blade on both sides. You're going to get cut. You're going to get wounded. But whatever her words, says the writer, look at her feet. Okay? Her feet go down to death. Her steps follow the path to Sheol. Where is she leading? She's leading you off the highway. And if she's leading you off the highway and you follow her, the path that she's leading you on will lead to death and to hell. Verses 5 and 6. She's not on the path. That's why it says she doesn't, her ways wander, she doesn't know it, because she's not on the highway. And she wants to bring you down to where she is. So that's the seduction. Point number 2 is the choice. Okay? This is verses 7 to 14. Verse 7. And now, O sons, listen to me and do not depart from the words of my mouth. Keep your way far from her and do not go near the door of her house. She's saying, don't even take the first step because of that hard wiring. Remember the hard wiring, the way we're made. But of course that's now been corrupted because of sin, but the wiring is still there. And if you take that first step, you will take the second step, and the third step, and the fourth step. It gets easier and easier. So don't even go near her house. Don't take the first step. Because once you take, other things start kicking in. The hard wiring will start kicking in. The sinful hard wiring will start kicking in. And it's like a set of doors, isn't it? Once you open the first door and you go through the second door, well, the second door is easier to open than the first door. The third door is easier. And then before you know where you are, you've arrived at her door and have opened her door. David takes one look at Bathsheba, doesn't he? But he takes a second look. And in that moment, David's universe, because of the hard wiring, contracts down to a body shape. Doesn't even know who she is. He's just seen a body. Now his universe is a body. I've got to possess it. And it leads to adultery, it leads to murder, and all that follows, just because he took a look, and just because he took the next step. So it's serious stuff, isn't it? And therefore he goes on and says, if you yield to her, what will happen? Well, you'll become enslaved. This is a sin that enslaves men. Verse 9, lest you give your honour to others and your years to the merciless. So in other words, you'll be like a slave. It'll enslave you and it'll rob you of all you've ever worked for. Verse 10, lest strangers take their fill of your strength and your labours go to the house of a foreigner. It'll rob you. It'll enslave you. It'll destroy all that you've worked for. And at the end, you'll be filled with bitter regrets. And at the end of your life, you groan, and your flesh and your body are consumed. And you say, how I hated discipline, and my heart despised reproof. I did not listen to the voice of my teachers, or incline my ear to my instructors. At the end of your life, you'll be filled with bitter regrets and self-loathing. And I thought, why didn't I listen? And if you think you can keep the romantic adventure a secret, then think again. It will come to light. I did not listen to the voice of my teachers or incline my ear to my instructors. I am at the brink of utter ruin in the assembled congregation. It comes to light. So the personal tragedy becomes a public disgrace. And, yeah, at the end of his life, filled with regrets, filled with bitterness. It's because, isn't it, the whole idea is, again, the hard wiring in. The two become one flesh. So it's not Lego. I'll just pull it apart. They become intertwined. So if you pull it apart, what happens is you tear yourself. That's what it's doing. That's why it says sexual immorality is the only sin against you. It's the sin against your body. You're tearing apart your own body and soul. And it's a wound that robs this man of a marriage, maybe of all that he loves, his strengths, robs him of his best days, his memories, and ultimately it robs him of his life. So whatever this sin promises, however attractive it appears to be, it leads to agony and shame. And we know that, don't we? These sins lead to divorce, a broken home, estranged children, sexual disease, loneliness, humiliation, sorrow, and unless there's repentance and a return to the Lord, it leads to hell. So whatever this woman is promising with her smooth words, it's a lie. And whatever she promises, the first thing you've got to remember is that she doesn't promise you the answer of a good conscience. So number three then. What then is this man supposed to do? Now, I'm not going to go into detail here. I do a marriage talk. I do three marriage talks for those who are getting married. And the third one is on the marriage bed. And this is one of the passages we turn to. And we go into more detail here. Sometimes the translators hide the detail. They make it more, what's the word? Less earthy. So if you read it out loud, it's less... you're not going to offend anyone. But actually the original is a bit more earthy than what we've got here. But I'm not going to say it. If you wanna, I have thought, I don't know if this is the right place to ask. I have thought sometimes about just looking at the Song of Solomon and something's in Proverbs, just to, with married couples, just to talk about those things. If that was a helpful thing to do. But maybe I've never had the courage to sort of announce that and invite people to come and do that. But I certainly do it with those preparing for marriage. Okay, look at verse 15. Drink water from your own cistern, flowing water from your own well. Okay, water here is being used as a metaphor, as a picture. When you're thirsty, you can't negotiate with thirst, can you? You just got to drink. Thirst must be satisfied. Well, here he's talking about a sexual thirst. How do you slake a sexual thirst? By a full and happy, or fulfilling and happy, sex life with your spouse. If you're thirsty, says the writer, satisfy that thirst with your wife. Drink water from your own cistern. And in case it sounds a bit dull, you know, a well or an enclosed system and all the water looks very still, he rephrases it in the second part of verse 15, flowing water from your own well. So it's a rich, continuous source of delight. Verse 16, should your springs be scattered abroad, streams of water in the streets, let them be for yourself alone and not for strangers with you. Don't look for sexual satisfaction beyond your marriage. Don't look outside the home. Don't look to strangers. That's what he's saying. Verse 18, let your fountain be blessed and rejoice in the wife of your youth, a lovely deer, a graceful doe. So we've gone from drinking water from your own cistern, it's flowing water from your own well, and now we're described as a fountain. A fountain of delight. So it's increasing, it's upping the satisfaction which this marriage life is giving. It's a fountain of delight. And of course it's a fountain, it's supposed to be continuous and overflowing. The marriage bed is supposed to be continuous and overflowing. Verse 19, let her breasts fill you at all times with delight, be intoxicated always in her love. So it's more explicit in the original, but be intoxicated by her love. So to be intoxicated, you wouldn't go to the bar and have a sherry and say, well, thank you very much, I've had my sherry. To be intoxicated means you drink and drink and drink until you are incapacitated, until you are intoxicated, until you are drunk. And again, that's what the writer is saying. It's not the occasional sherry. Drink of your wife's love until you are intoxicated, until you are incapable. He's saying, don't let this woman lead you astray. Let your wife lead you astray. The marriage bed, where there are no inhibitions, where you are to lose control, where nothing is forbidden. Are we getting a bit too much? Is this all too much to say? Well, not if you're living in the real world. 1 Corinthians 7. 1 Corinthians 7, Corinth is a very immoral city. So there are lots of questions about marriage and sexuality that come up. And 1 Corinthians 7 deals with a lot of those questions. And Paul says this, he says, do not deprive one another, he's talking about sex now, do not deprive one another, except perhaps by agreement for a limited time, that you may devote yourselves to prayer. But then come together again, so that Satan may not tempt you because of your lack of self-control. In other words, he's saying that there are some couples who don't have a fast of food, they have a fast of the marriage bed. But he says, that's to be by mutual agreement, but only you're doing that by mutual agreement so you can give yourself to prayer, but don't do it for too long, because Satan will tempt you because of your lack of self-control. In an immoral society, in a society where sexual mores are at a very low ebb, like our society, then it's not just a case of, it's a case of protecting Christian marriages, protecting one another. It keeps you from wrecking everything. And so he says, verse 20, why should you be intoxicated, my son, with a forbidden woman and embrace the bosom of an adulteress? So what's the writer saying? He's saying that a good sex life glorifies God. It keeps a marriage safe. It keeps it alive. It keeps it joyful. An open fire. We love an open fire. A roaring fire in the fireplace. Fills the room with light and heat and cheers everyone who comes into the room. That's great. So fire is very good in the fireplace. Fire is very good in its proper place. But if you light a fire in the middle of the room, it'll burn the house down. And that's the situation here. Sex is good. It's a gift of God. It's hardwired in. God has made men and women to be like that. That's his plan, that's his purpose. But if you take it outside the God-ordained boundary of marriage, then it destroys bodies, it destroys relationships, it destroys lives, ultimately it destroys souls. For a man's ways are before the eyes of the Lord, and he ponders all his paths. The iniquities of the wicked ensnare him, and he is held fast in the cords of his sin. He dies for lack of discipline, and because of his great folly, he is led astray. The Lord is always watching. And those who don't think the Lord is worthy of their worship, well, therefore, they're not worthy to bear his image. And he gives them over to sins which destroy his image in them. And if you read Romans 1, he gives them over to often sexual sins, because sexual sins are against your own body. They destroy the image of God in you. And it's actually the unfolding of his wrath. So chapter 5 is there, because the end of chapter 4 is all been about wisdom, wisdom, wisdom. Keep on this highway, keep on this highway. The danger is those who make sin look attractive. And because of the hard wiring, both our fallenness, that is a very, very real danger. And just a few words, which seem to be pretty harmless, they're smooth, they're sweet, they're like honey. You wouldn't necessarily the danger, because once you step off that way and start going down this path, you do not know where you will stop. And the guard against that, says the writer, is that it's not because any of this is wrong, it's hardwired in, but it's only supposed to be for the marriage bed and nowhere else.